You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
Hey, this is Jen Johans at FilmIntuition.com and FilmIntuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. This week, I'm joined by two of my favorite people, Sean Burns and Sean Cosby. Sean Burns is the Boston-based film critic that you can read at WBUR and at splicedpersonality.com, and also his wonderful writing is now available on the Spliced Personality Substack, which I highly recommend. S.A. Cosby is a New York Times best-selling, award-winning writer from southeastern Virginia. He is the author of King of Ashes, All the Sinners Bleed, Razorblade Tears, Blacktop Wasteland, and more. Parachons, but they spell it differently, so I can't really make a fun catchphrase for that, like online, but I'm working on it. How are you guys doing?
Awesome.
Good, good.
Well, I know we talked about this last season, wanting to do an episode devoted to Delroy Lindo, who's long been one of my favorite character actors and yours too. He's good in everything, but when you look up the guy's credits, you realize he has been in some bad movies, but he's also like the best thing in those movies, which is what we're going to talk about today in a couple of these. But oh my gosh. And then I was just talking to a friend and they brought up Heist and, you know, the way he does his line delivery with Gene Hackman. I mean, he is great. So Sean, what do you think the appeal is, Burns, about Delroy Lindo for you?
It's strange because I always like tell people there was just this wonderful period in the 90s where whenever you went to a movie, Delroy Lindo would just be there being awesome.
Yeah.
And like we had no idea how good it was, like random ass parts. Like remember Broken Arrow? He's just the dude in the control room.
Yes. Or he's in Ransom. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then like he disappeared for a long time. I thought he'd like quit acting or if something had happened. And it's always the same with these guys. I looked them up and they've been on TV shows for like 9 years that I never watched, but I was like, oh, okay. So he did continue to thrive and probably make millions of dollars. It just, we didn't get to see him in every fourth build part anymore. And I feel like cinema was the poorer for that.
Exactly. Yeah. And speaking of small screen, I loved him recently on The Good Fight. Probably not as
yes.
Oh, you do? Okay, good.
Yeah, I did watch that. I don't watch a lot of TV shows, but I watched that.
Yes. And how about you, Sean Cosby? What do you think of Delroy?
Viewers or listeners of the podcast before will know that I live in the boonies. So they can't see it, but I've cut my camera off to improve my signal. Because those are the times we live in. We used to live in a society, but anyway.
That's fine.
No, for me, I remember Delroy Lindo. The first time I ever remember seeing him was Malcolm X as West Indian Archie. And he's one of those guys that, as Sean was saying, all of a sudden it seemed like he was everywhere. And even if you were watching a movie that wasn't that great or a movie that was really great, you know, Get Shorty, which we're not going to go into detail about, but he's amazing, Get Shorty. He's amazingly horrible in Side of House Rules. But then you have a movie like like A Life Less Ordinary, which, you know, for such a good title is a terrible movie. But
but he's like, he and Holly Hunter are like the best things in that movie.
I think we can actually use a Delroy Lindo line from Get Shorty here when he says, I've seen better film on teeth.
You know, I have to say Danny Boyle goes really hit or miss for me, especially the ones by the screenwriters, the John Hodge. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the thing about Lindo that makes him so interesting, even in bad movies, is, and I was talking to our friend Jordan Harper about this the other day, And we were talking about, well, we're talking about Idris Elba, you know, we're talking about how he's such a good actor.
Yeah.
And Jordan made the comment, I don't want to put words in Jordan's mouth, but made a comment to the effect of, he's a really good actor, but he doesn't seem like he's a movie star. And Delroy Lindo is a guy who's a really good actor who could have been a movie star if that's the route that he wanted to go. Cause he has the charisma. He has the it factor. He has the screen presence. You know, I'll never forget him in Malcolm X, you know, talking to Denzel Washington. Very few people Denzel Washington doesn't blow off the screen, you know, just by a look or a, you know, and you know, and with Delroy, he you feel like he's, I won't say met his match, that's an antagonistic way of saying it, but you felt that, oh, this is someone who's in his league. And then he became just this really incredible character actor for the next 20 odd years.
Yeah, well, they both went to American Conservatory Theater, and they did some of the scenes together when they were like prepping in his audition with Denzel for Malcolm X. I didn't realize that Delroy had turned down a role in Do the Right Thing, and so it's amazing to me that Spike Lee was like, "Oh, you turned it. I'm going to go to you again." Like, you know, it just seemed
well,
amazing.
Well, because Sam Jackson had turned him down.
Yeah. And so, you know,
Sam wanted more money, so that's how Delroy Lindo got a film career.
And then he's in, you know, Crooklyn. He's great in that. I mean, I think Defy Bloods is probably his best Spike Lee, but this is amazing. I mean, he makes that character, what is it, like 5 or 6 scenes only?
Yeah.
But you remember that guy, yes.
It's so funny because he could have a year like 1995.
Yes.
Where he's Bo Catlett in Get Shorty, and then he's Rodney Little, one of the most realistic and terrifying, quote unquote, gangster drug dealers ever. Like,
that's my this favorite is, Spike and Delroy performance right there. That's
that Clockers?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, but then he can also do Congo, which is awful. Like, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Because I think it was the National Society of Film, I don't know, one of the branches awarded him, or like he was nominated in 95 that year, and they put those two movies and like ignored the rest of the shit he was doing. Yeah.
And it's like you have this incredible, like Rodney Little, he as Rodney Little is terrifying. You know, I felt for Mekhi Phifer's character for Strike, the whole movie is like, man, just leave. He is going to kill you, like really bad. Like, he's like, because you're not, your heart isn't in it. And then turn around and he can do one of my favorite movie titles, because it's taken from one of my favorite songs. He can do a movie like Feeling Minnesota, where he's this, you know, eponymous red, you know, but you can tell he was hired to be the weird heavy, but he brings such pathos to the role. He brings such, you know, this guy Red is a gangster, but he also somebody who kind of, you know, he knows he's a loser. He knows this is a dead end job, but you know, and Delroy brings that sort of very shaky death of a salesman gravitas to what is essentially a throwaway role in a stolen, you know, a stolen Soundgarden lyric for a title, you know, but he has just something he brings. Like everybody else can be mailing it in, and Delroy Lindo's going to hit it. He's going to hit it as hard as he can.
Yeah.
He's got that face though. He looks like he's seen some shit.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. He has seen some shit. And also the pathos you were talking about is what makes his performance in Cider House Rules so effective. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Somebody else start that one, because that's a role.
That is, yeah. You know, we were talking about it. I don't know what order you want to go in. We're just kind of jumping around. But
yeah.
Cider House Rules, we were talking off air a little, is a movie that both Sean Burns and I liked a lot more when it came out. And then when we watched it this time, it's, for me anyway, I'm not going to speak for Sean, it's good, but it's not quite, it doesn't quite work as well. It feels a little more manipulative now, I would say, but the performances are amazing. Michael Caine, you know, I still, I'm kind of mixed on Toby in some parts, and I'm still a little mixed there, but Delroy Lindo and Michael Caine in particular are phenomenal.
I got to meet John Irving last year in Florida.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, at the Key West Literary Festival. He's one of our personal heroes. He's one of the nicest people you ever meet. He really is very, you know, he's a very down to earth guy. At one point in the 70s and 80s, he was part of the big three or the big four of American writers. Mm-hmm. You know, he was in that with James Michener, Gore Vidal, the new age of like Donna Tartt, Bret Easton Ellis. He was sort of the bridge between the heavy, deep me generation finding myself novels of the 70s and the more esoteric avant-garde sort of novels of the early 80s, the Tom Robbins and stuff like that. And I asked him about Side Hustle because to me it's such a powerful book. I think it is a good movie, like you said. Overall, it is pushing you in a direction, and it's very obviously pushing you in a direction. And
Yeah.
it's not making any bones about it. We want you to cry. It's a treacly story. And so when I was talking to Mr. Irving about it, he says, I've had really good experiences in Hollywood. And I asked him, I said, well, do you feel like that book represented your book? He said, no, not at all. He's like, but they pay you a lot of money and they get to do, they pay for the
Yeah.
songs. And I thought that was such a really great way of saying it. But he really likes, from what I gather from our conversation, he really
Yeah.
likes Delroy Lindo's performance. And again, talking about the pathos of it, here's a guy who's not a good guy. Here's a guy who's not a good person, a
You
fascinating
think?
character. I know, right?
He's
I mean,
terrible.
I'm
Yeah.
just going on a limb here, but again, Delroy brings this sort of humanness to a monster.
Yeah.
And it's, it's easy to be the badass. It's easy to say the cool lines, to do the Ezekiel speech. It's hard to be an actor who takes those kind of chances with your image, with your self-awareness. And I thought he's just amazing in it.
Yeah, most actors do not want to play unheroic parts or really dark parts like that. I've known a few actors who say they wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. And then others are like, well, that's just what you do. And you've played a lot of jerks, you know? And it's like, yeah, like one guy told me about auditioning for The Rapist and A Time to Kill. And I'm like, oh my God. And he's like, yeah, it's just a part. And I'm thinking, I'm not doing that. Like, oh my God. Like when Patrick Wilson played too many creeps in a row, and then all of a sudden, and Aaron Eckhart, and all of a sudden they were like, you know what? We got to change it up a little.
The thing about like Cider House, like I think Jen liked it more than I did when it came out. I thought the movie was okay in '99, and I hadn't seen it since. And I watched it this morning, and I was like, "Oh, this is bad."
Oh
Except when Delroy Lindo's on screen,
yes.
because there's a complexity there to the character that I feel the rest of the movie is sorely lacking. The direction was making me crazy because you've got this Irving story with all the perversity and eccentricities and
Yeah.
everyone's kind of not really what they seem. And it's just slathered with this treacly piano music and these close-ups of these mawkish, smiling little
Yeah, the
children.
Rachel Portman music was out of place in that. It wasn't
And it's just this
Shock-a-Lot lasting also.
oppressively feel-good movie about, an ether-addicted abortionist. This dude fucking
Nothing
his
says family.
daughter, and there's all these. It's a strange mismatch between the direction and the material, but obviously it worked because it got like 8 million Oscar nominations, and Michael
Yeah.
Caine not being British is so weird to me. Like, I know actors do accents all the time, and I
Yes.
don't care. There should be colorblind casting. I don't care. Al Pacino can be Latino. It's fine with me. But Michael Caine
Yeah.
talking American, I'm like, nope, that dude ain't from Maine.
Oh, man.
I think
I thought I would
that's
get
a
used to
and
it,
this
but.
isn't a John Irving episode, but I think that's a problem that Irving has with his books going into movies, that movie directors don't understand like the perverseness of it, but the perverseness is not gratuitous. It's to show we're all animals. That's his kind of philosophy, that we're all animals
Yeah.
under all of our niceties. He comes from that Raymond Carver school of we're going to say really mean things in the nicest way possible. And, it's going to break your heart. And I
Yeah.
think Hollywood directors don't understand that. Cause like, I don't know either one of y'all have ever seen The Hotel New Hampshire. Nothing
Boy,
like
is
the
that
book and it
not like
really,
the book.
yeah.
I haven't seen it.
It is not like the book. And the book is probably, gosh, one of Irving's most twisted, probably. It's, I wouldn't say twisted. That's the wrong word. It's out there. My point is, same thing with Side House Rules. When you read the book is way more, it's on a lower level. It's not as mawkish, It's not trying to make you feel, it's not a feel good story about an orphanage because those aren't feel good stories,
Yeah.
But again, it seemed like everybody was doing their best. But then Delroy was like, oh, I'm going to really show you what life was like in New England in 1912 for a guy like this and how he sees the world. And I thought, again, I don't know what direction he was given, but he kind of felt like to me he was doing his own thing. Like, I'm going to really delve into this terrible person and show you, for lack of a cliche, you know, the person underneath. And I just, there are actors that can do it that won't, and there are actors that can't do it that try. And he's one of the ones that can do it that actually does it.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you've seen it before and then you watch it again, his line reads on a couple things suddenly take a more sinister. And you realize, oh, I ignored this weird feeling in the pit of my stomach when he made a joke to Erykah Badu about like cutting clothes off people. And, you know, and it was like, well, that's just creepy. Like, you know, but you just push it down because it's Delroy Lindo and we're supposed to be like thinking he's this reverential figure. And so I think, you know, that takes a lot of courage to do and a lot of, you know, it would have been easy to wink at the audience in places. And he resists that. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that 100%. And I think that's a good way of putting it. He's an actor that doesn't wink at the audience a lot.
Even, no. We should have had more winking in the core, but
I was going to say the core.
He's tremendous so in the core.
I love him in the core, but those guys, I feel so, whatever they were getting paid was not enough. And I am not somebody who would say that about Hollywood because they had to like spit out all this just batshit bananas pseudoscience babble. Like, can you imagine scientists watching this movie? They actually did vote on, you know, the worst science representation of all time, and they chose the core.
Well,
yeah. I mean, that's why I liked it. I enjoy this movie. Like, lean into this shit. I don't need it to be plausible. Like, okay,
no, we God, just need it to, doesn't like, have
go,
to be.
Go nuke the core of the planet, otherwise planes will crash.
Why is it over 2 hours? I don't know. Yeah.
It's too long. It's way too long.
That moon movie recently where, no, the moon is a secret space station. Yeah, that's an hour and 50 minutes. I'll never get back. That's thanks, guys. Thanks.
That was all worth it just for Nikki describing it to Jen.
Yeah. I'm like, what is moon fall about? Moon's falling, Jen. Fucking moon is falling. We are doing... this is kind of a good one to be able to tie in then. We're doing a space movie episode this season. So we're going to be recording it in a few weeks.
Oh, nice. We're both,
like, dumb and smart, but, you know, it's us. At first she's like, should we just talk about Moonfall? And we thought about it, but there's no topping that episode.
But Delroy Lindo in the core.
Yeah.
It's so funny because he's playing, you know, these movies all have archetypes, right? And you got Aaron Eckhart, the square-jawed, you know, adventurer. Basically, these are all pulp movies set now or set in the future. So you've got the swashbuckling adventurer slash sort of pseudoscientist Aaron Eckhart. You've got you've got the government, you know, the government stooge. And then you've got somebody like Delroy Lindo, who is the mad scientist. He is the crazy. And, you know, it's funny, I remember when they go in the core, they first go to see him, and he's got this, you know, like you were saying, pseudoscientific machine that can evaporate, you know, dirt. And I'm like, okay, you created this. In the world of the story, this exists. There's so much other shit we could do with this machine. Like, there's so much other stuff we could do, like in Africa, like finding water for people or clearing land or
No, they were waiting for that moment.
I'm waiting for you to call so we go to
the whole thing just for this.
Yes, I've been working on this for 30 years. I haven't combed my hair in a decade just so I can make sure I'm here. Because that's his hair in that movie is, woo, his hair in that movie is something else. It is, there was no one on set that knew how to style African-American people's hair. They were like, just put this goddamn wig on.
Well, I feel like that was like his like Dr. Emmett Brown thing, right?
Yeah, it is.
But it's Delroy, so he's not a mad scientist. He's just kind of distracted.
Yes. Well,
he's got that
one
gravitas.
Plays on Journey to the Center of the Earth. So
he's in a different movie because everybody else knows. Like, I give it to Aaron Eckhart. He knows what kind of movie he's in. Like, goofy, but I'm playing it up straight. I'm doing almost a Leslie Nielsen thing. Delroy is like, no, I'm really a scientist. And I'm really irritated that you guys have come and slowed me down on the research I'm doing. He just gives off this permanent, what was my brother said? He gives off permanently mad dad vibes.
Well, his relationship with Tucci, I mean, they could have spun off a whole movie out of those.
Yeah,
those two just breaking each other's balls the whole
like
time.
The Fast and the Furious spinoffs, basically. Yeah. Suddenly
just
his
introduction with Tucci appears and he's like, shit, you didn't die?
You're going to talk it up. They're going to do a crossover with Fast and Furious in the core. They're going
to. Yes, they have to.
Hillary Swank driving the.
But I mean, he's just such an interesting actor in that I know, and we've all seen movies where you can tell everybody's mailing it in. And again, whether it's Sinners or whether it's the core, whether it's, you know, Feeling Minnesota, which Feeling Minnesota is a bad movie. That's a bad movie. That's a movie, very few redeemable qualities. Keanu Reeves, that was that point where people were sort of getting tired of, oh, he mumbles. That's cute. So that wasn't working for him. There's Vincent D'Onofrio's in there just doing Vincent D'Onofrio things. And it's like, and here comes, like I said, here comes Delroy Lindo to, you know, he's got the red wig on. So obviously he's in the ethos of the story, but he's bringing his own thing to it. This character has a whole interesting backstory that I would have loved to heard about.
It was shot right by my great uncle Joe's bar. So that it has one good thing. So they would go and hang. And Joe said his favorite was, I mean, Keanu, not so much, but he loved Cameron. She was really friendly. But Vincent D'Onofrio, he was like, this guy could close the place down telling stories. So yeah, loved him.
All I remember that movie was Courtney Love's really funny in it.
Yeah, she's good in it. She's good in it. It was that, yeah. It was in the wake of all those movies, and we've talked about this before
as
well.
Yeah, the
Tarantino effect. Everybody has to have a quirky, off-color story that's sort of violent, sort of funny, and, you know, it's one of them things, and again, it's one, and oh, we gotta have a black guy, get Dory Linda, we can't get Samuel Jackson and grab him, yeah. Like, you know.
If he's not doing something, otherwise Cheadle, yeah, it was one of those guys, and and also Get Shorty was kind of, let's cash in on the popularity of Pulp Fiction and Tarantino, but they did a good job with that.
But no, Delroy Lindo, I would love to ask him, because I've been lucky enough over the last few years to meet a few actors and a few people that, you know, entertainers that take roles for a living. And it's like, you know, I'd love to ask him, like, okay, you know, Michael Caine famously says he did Jaws the Revenge to pay for his mom's house or something of that nature. I'd love to ask Delroy, like, what was the bill that was on you for the core? Did you owe the mob money? It was like, was there people looking for you?
It's not my proudest moment, but he was in a TV movie with Kirstie Alley called Profoundly Normal. And they play special needs cashiers at, I think it's Walmart.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
I remember my friend had taped it, and we got home from a bar in New York City at 4 in the morning. It was like, we're totally watching this now. And it was like Delroy Lindo and Kirstie Alley fall in love, and their parents, like, they want to get married, and their parents are like, no, you're not mentally capable of having a relationship. But we had to record it because the commercial said, the only thing special about them was their love.
I need to watch this.
Yeah, I mean, again, it was like we were like 16 beers deep when we finally turned it on, but it was, they were both going for it. I mean, like you said, Delroy doesn't phone it in.
No, he does not.
And neither does Kirstie Alley, so you can imagine.
I think that's the interesting thing about a guy like Lindo, though. Like, you know, I would love to, like, you know, his, looking at his filmography, it's like you got, like I said, in wonderful roles like Crooklyn and Clockers and Blood In and Blood Out, Malcolm X, and so on and so forth. And then it's like a movie like Congo. Like, did you take it? Because, I'll go there. I'll take a vacation to Africa. Fuck it. Like,
did they even go to Africa for Congo?
I don't think
so. Like,
I think
it's all Burbank back lots to me.
It's probably on the set, but I think, you know, I'm just curious because, like, Lindo. And I may be wrong. I want to say he's never been nominated for Oscar, but I thought he was. Thought he was from Malcolm X, but
I think
no,
everybody
he wasn't.
thought he was, but he wasn't until, yeah, just this
Oh.
year.
Yeah,
He
and
kind of
so here's
stopped
a
doing movies for 20 years, though. I mean, now.
but like here's a guy who has done such good performances. Like I said, I think it's interesting that he could have been, you know, him and Denzel are about the same age. You know, it's like I wonder if he made a conscious choice to not go. You know, it's very rare to get the Denzel route where you're a movie star, you're a respected actor, and you're box office, and you know,
Yeah.
that's why he's Denzel. And you could also argue that, and I'm talking about specifically African American actors. You could also argue that Samuel Jackson's had one of the greatest careers in history. You know, he's been
Yeah,
nominated for
for
Oscar. He's been
sure.
in like 300, 200 movies. A lot of them
He's
are
in four
turkeys, but a lot of
movies
them
a
are
year,
good.
and he's good in one of them, and he's great in one of them.
Yeah.
That's all. Then the other three are the money jobs. Like, it's
Yep.
like Jackson totally has the Hackman career, where we're only going to remember, like, oh, you were in like 12 of the greatest
Nicolas
movies ever made.
Cage too.
We'll forget about your seven big
Yes.
pieces of shit you did for the money.
Yes.
But Delroy is because he never got that high, his lows don't look that low. Because, like, oh, Delroy, that's, you know, he's the great, in my opinion, he's the great, you know, one of the great character actors of the last 25 years. One of these guys that you could
Oh,
just, you
yeah.
know, like, you know, we always talk about, oh gosh, Fredo, John Cavioli from Godfather. He only did three movies, but all three of them were classics, you know.
Five.
And then, you know, unfortunately, he
Five.
passed
And
away
all five
so
were
young.
nominated for Best Picture. Yeah.
Five, thank you. Yeah, and he and
Yeah.
all of them are classic, and that's his overall, you know. And I think Delroy is not John Cavizzi, obviously he's still with us, but I think he definitely made decisions as to, I'm gonna take this film for pay. I got, you know, a house note mortgage coming up, and I'm gonna take this film to stretch my wings to do something different. So I'm, you know, it's interesting because we all on the outside look in, seeing a performer in a really bad movie, and we think, oh, how could you do that? That's so dumb, blah, blah. You know, nobody goes into it wanting to make a bad movie, I
Oh,
don't
no,
think.
not at all. Yeah.
You know, and people want to be filmmakers, and, you know, sometimes filmmakers are not as good as they think they are, and, you know, and sometimes they learn and they get the same thing about actors. And so I'm sure the movies that we're talking about now that are bad movies, I mean, when he signed on the core, I mean, I'm sure he didn't think it was Shakespeare, but, you
I think
know.
he just thought it was going to be fun. Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes you just want to do something for fun. But it's just interesting because we've seen other actors who don't, when they're in a movie that they know is not good or is not going to do well, or you can sometimes see them turn it down, you
Oh,
know?
yeah.
I think this, and we were talking about, you know, part of this episode came about talking about how good he is in bad movies. But then I think afterwards, when you watch the movie and you're the only good part, or you people tell you you're the only good part, that's got
Yeah.
to be hard too. Because you were on that with, you know, with those folks. Y'all all work together, you know,
Exactly.
you know.
Yeah, like A Life Less Ordinary, which I remember being a total mess, but in my mind, it seemed like it was entertaining, or maybe that was just a happy memory of me in the 90s. The 90s was a simpler time. But I remember the best thing about it was, yeah, like I said, Delroy and Holly Hunter, because they just play off each other very well. They're doing something totally different. It would have been really easy for them to kind of play these sort of renegade angels and be exactly the same, but they take different approaches, and I think that they're very serious about it, and that's what makes it really funny for them. The rest of the movie is just a slog to get through, and oh my God, Tucci is in it again. Yeah, poor guy.
Less amusing than he was in the other one.
Yes.
With Holly Hunter, this was that weird period in the 90s, like right after The Piano,
Yeah,
and
where
like
she's
she
just
just
like,
decided she was going to be sexy and everything. Like she was in
yeah.
Crash, and she's in the little short skirts in this, and she's always like showing off her legs, which got to
Yep.
be like 2 feet long.
Oh.
Delroy is a big guy. She looks like his little munchkin sidekick.
It's funny
I
because,
remember this movie
like,
being
there.
bad, but I don't remember it being this bad. I
No,
mean,
God, no.
Excruciating.
Again, yeah.
It,
This kind
I
of,
watched it last
yeah,
night
it's a
to,
challenge.
you know, get ready for this, and it's like, what is, am I high? Like,
That's what it
I've
feels
taken
like.
edibles
Yes.
before, but what is, why, they're angels? These people are, like, you know what I felt like watching the movie last night? We used to joke my grandmother when I was a kid because she, as she got older, as we all want to do, she would sometimes not be as sharp as she was. And sometimes we'd watch a TV movie and she would stop us like, okay, who's those people again? And I'm like, Grandma, those are those folks. They're with the bag. Oh, okay. And then a few minutes later go by. I felt like that the whole movie.
I
Like,
know. I was like, wait a minute, did she get away? Like, what are we doing?
what do we want to
who are
have
these
happen
people?
here?
It makes,
And again,
no sense accidentally.
it's
oh
one of
my God,
those
it's
films like
so
these
awful.
guys, yeah, these like four friends, they made Shallow Grave and Trainspotting. Everyone's calling them geniuses. They get this big studio budget. Every movie star in Hollywood wants to be in it. And it all just falls apart so badly because everyone's blowing smoke up their asses. Like all of them, like they didn't work together again for like 25 years, right? It wasn't until the
I think they
Trainspotting
did the
sequel that the
beach, and then after the beach, it was like, oh, we
No, but
fucked up
Ewan
now.
wasn't in that.
Oh, no, that's true. But the screenwriter, yeah.
Oh yeah, but wasn't he like, and didn't he kind of get, he and Alex Garland have a thing or
Yeah,
something?
they did.
Like there was so there, it was just been nothing but bad vibes after this, right? Until the train, till Trainspotting 2, which I happen to love.
Everybody blames each other for that movie. Life Less Ordinary is like,
Remind
it was
me, you ever see
you.
even Cowgirls Get the Blues? Where you're just like sitting there going like, what the fuck is happening? Your last two movies were the best movies I've seen in years. And
Gus Van Sant. You're like, you made Drugstore Cowboy?
all that
It
incredible
just felt like,
confidence is just put in the service of terrible ideas.
It felt like you were saying, Sean, nobody was there to tell them, hey, slow down for a second. Say, what now? The angels come to Earth? The whole premise,
It's
it's
like
just,
five different movies.
well, and it's so much of it's from, you ever see Two of a Kind with John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John?
No.
Oh, there's a
Yes.
whole,
Yes.
there's a whole thing with these angels like trying to get the two of
Oh,
them to fall
okay.
in love, or God, voiced by Gene Hackman, is going to destroy the world if John Travolta doesn't like sacrifice, like
Okay.
fall in love with Olivia Newton-John by midnight. And he jumps in front of a bullet for her. There's like so many like recurring things that are in this movie that it's got to be some sort of
Okay.
homage or remake.
Yeah.
And like Two of a Kind is one of the worst movies of the 80s. Like it like did them both, and Travolta and Olivia John in movie jail. Olivia Newton-John was like never in a movie again after that. It was just like, okay, we're done.
Now, she was in A Mom for Christmas, the TV movie. I did enjoy that. She was a mannequin, you guys, and she comes to life. And she's in a department store, and it was good. And then,
Oh no.
yes. I mean, it was good when you're a kid, you
It
know?
just felt like a Life Less Ordinary. Like I said, it was a bunch of Legos that didn't fit together.
Yeah,
And like, and they
exactly.
just forced, watching is like stepping on it, like just continuing stepping on this Lego contraption that doesn't fit together, that really hurts. And you're like, why am I doing this? I can stop it. I'm an adult. I can stop anytime.
And all these
But
ugly 80s fashions, I mean, both of their haircuts are hideous. Like, you've got these two gorgeous leads with the worst haircuts they've ever worn. Like, I don't know what he's doing with that fucking 70s mod helmet, but she's styled like Hillary Clinton.
It was a weird look. Very strange decisions.
And
It's
we'll
like
just
you
have them
see.
be incredibly unpleasant to each other for 90 minutes. But
And
then at
he's
the
like
end, like you
writing
say, with
some
how, like,
novel. That makes no sense. Like, it makes about as much sense as the movie.
but it's
Like,
funny
I'm a
because with all
dreamer.
the
He doesn't have
problems,
any dreams. He wants to be
no.
a janitor, but he's like, I'm a
Yeah, he
dreamer.
just
Like, you
wants
want
to
your.
like mop up shit for a living. It's funny with all the problems that movie has, the
Wants to mop up
chemistry
the
between,
movie, you guys. No.
I know, but the chemistry between Holly Hunter and Delroy is really sweet, you know, and really it works. And that's again, you know, talking about chemistry, and I compare him to this guy a lot because I think their careers are similar in a way. Idris Elba is somebody who has his, it's such personal magnetism as a, like to look at him. He looks good in a suit. He looks good walking across screen. But then it's like nobody can match that. No woman can match it with him, and no, and the only man that can match it with him was like Denzel in American Gangster. He had to shoot him in the head, and so like, and so it's hard to
Ruth
get somebody
Wilson,
to.
I thought was good, but that was a TV show. That was Luther.
Oh no, Luther's amazing. Luther's great,
But
and
otherwise.
I think that goes to the point of making movies though. On a movie screen, it's almost like he's too bright. And what was that movie he did with, oh God, with Kate Winslet a few years ago? Oh my God. Where they were trapped on the mountain.
That was terrible. Yeah, they're in the mountains and
Oh, yes, I remember that. It was on Netflix.
Yeah. And they got, I know they thought, oh, we're going to make this
Mountain
really
Between Us.
beautiful, these beautiful people. Kate Winslet, you know, looks beautiful. You got the golden hour sun hitting her right in the face. You got Idris Elba. You may be the most sexy man in film in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
No chemistry between them.
No.
None. And they're trying. And they are trying, but it's not there. And I bring up Idris again because I think Delroy's career, Idris could have that kind of career if he so chooses. If he decides to make the decision, okay, I'm not a movie star, but I'm going to be a really good actor. You know, I'm going to be a good supporting actor. I'm going to stop
Yeah.
trying to lead stuff. Cause, you know, you look at Five Bloods, I know I'm rambling, but I'm going to bring it back to together here. You look at Five Bloods, right? An
Yeah.
army movie, a military movie, probably maybe Delroy's finest performance, you know,
Yeah.
as a black Trump supporter and why he's that way and where that comes from and the pain that he's carrying with him. And then you look at a movie like Beast of No Nation with Idris Elba, which to me is his best performance.
Okay.
Beast of No Nation, he is ferocious in that movie about the child soldier from
Yes.
Rwanda.
Yes.
And it made me think about these two men whose careers could be, like I said, called similar. Delroy has decided this is the character actor career I want. Good movies, bad movies, I'm gonna always bring it the best way I can. I don't need to be a lead man. I don't, you know, and he's 73 now. He's probably not thinking about being a lead man anymore. I think it's interesting to see. I would be interested to see if Idris can come around to that mentality, what his career looked like. Because, like I said, you think of great character actors over the years. You think of Walter Brennan Sr. You think of like folks like you were talking about Cavill's earlier. You talk about Paul Mooney. You talk about you know, just great character actors who are always in the background, in the periphery of something. And I think Delroy Lindo is probably one of the greats. And I don't know. I'm just curious about that. I wonder, like, I
Yeah,
think
I
about that.
think he looks at people like John Cazale and thinks, you know, like that is an actor I'd want to be like, or a Gene Hackman even. Yeah.
Yeah. He's so good with Hackman and Heist. They
I
have that
know, I
like
love
perfect
it.
moment.
God.
When they say
Yeah.
goodbye to
Let's
each
talk
other
about
at the
Heist for a
counter,
minute.
I'm like, am I crying?
Yeah, I know they had the best chem. I mean, Rebecca Pigeon's great and stuff, but they just had such good chemistry together. Yes.
No,
Yeah. Well,
Heist is, God, Heist is one of my favorite crime movies ever made.
yeah.
It's so smooth. It's so smooth, but raw. It feels like that 70s sort of American
Yeah.
zoetrope feel to it. You know, obviously these are big stars, Gene Hackman, Delroy Lindo, Danny DeVito, so on and so forth. But
My beloved
they're
Ricky
acting
Jay.
Ricky
Yeah.
Jay, the R.I.P. Ricky Jay, but they're acting big in a small movie. You know, and that you know that's again that 70s feel, that
Yeah.
Serpico, that you know that early 80s Thief. It felt very much, you know, obviously to me it felt like an homage to Thief. And again, Derek Lindo, in a movie full of heavy hitters,
Yep.
he makes such an impression as I never felt of him as Gene Hackman's sidekick. I always felt he was his
No,
partner.
they were like on equal footing. Yeah.
Yeah, I went to see that the last summer at Lincoln Center. There was a tribute to Hackman, and I was in town for a couple of days. I was like, oh, they're showing Heist on A Day in Town. I know what I'm doing.
Yes. I know. Yeah, such a
No.
strong way. I think that was 2000, right? So basically closing out that decade, and then the way kind of everything happened after Malcolm X with such a powerful performance. Yeah. So you guys,
It
you
was
think.
funny when you guys, when we talked about doing this and you said the movies, like Malcolm X was on that night on TCM.
That's right. Yep. And he just, you know, he just got his nomination for Sinners. Yeah.
So it was funny because I said, like, oh, good, I'll just watch the West Indian Archie scenes because that's the first
Yeah.
half of the movie, and because it was starting at 10, and then I'll go to bed. Cut to 1:45 in the morning, I'm finishing
Yeah.
the
I
film.
had not seen it since 1992. I
Oh,
actually share a birthday with Malcolm X,
wow.
and my mom was like, she took a class at University of Minnesota back in the day called Black Power, and she, you know, read all the the slave journals, the diaries. She read Malcolm X, and so she was very like, she took a Native American class, like, I am going to make sure my kids know about other cultures. And so, you know, she rented this for us, and then we would like had discussions. And I remember that scene. How many of these scenes were like seared into my brain on only seeing it then and then watching it now, like the dictionary scene. I remember asking her, is that real? And she said, well, I always tell you to look things up, go in the other room, get the dictionary. And I did. And it was like, wow. Yeah. So I remember how much of an impact this movie had on me as a kid. And it was some of those things just felt like I'd just seen it yesterday. So that's a powerful movie. Yeah.
Everybody in Malcolm X was robbed of Oscars. That's my opinion. Everybody from Al Freeman as Elijah Muhammad to Denzel as Malcolm
Angela
X, who doesn't
Bassett.
look like Malcolm X at all. But he just brings the charisma, the energy, the you know, of course he's an actor, he's gonna do his work, learning the speaking patterns. But it's not just, it's his bearing, it's the way he carries himself. And then I love West Indian Archie, because West Indian Archie, I have a love for the Harlem Renaissance. When I was a kid,
Oh,
my
yeah.
mom, these be these series of books you could buy. Anheuser-Busch used to put them out with Time Life, and they were like the Harlem Renaissance. It was about Langston Hughes and Paul Dunbar. You know, all these wonderful writers at that time, Zora Neale Hurston, folks like that, musicians, just the way Harlem was at that time. And so anyway, West Indian Archie to me was always the archetype, atypical gangster of that period of time. That if I ever wrote a book set in that, in the Harlem Renaissance, he's going to be in it, that type of character. And
Yeah.
again, talking about Delroy Lindo, he just brings such energy, such menace and intelligence to the character. You know, there's a little scene in Malcolm X where he's telling, you know, Malcolm X, Malcolm Little at the time, you know, don't write nothing down. If the man ain't got no paper, he
Yeah,
can't convict
the
none. All
numbers.
these brilliant little street hustler things that are true, but he says them like he's a war chief. Like he says them with the energy of a Shakespearean actor. And I just think, like I said, him and Denzel and Malcolm X, when they're on screen together, it's electric. Especially toward the end. A lot of times in films, in my opinion, I should say, let me preface it. A lot of times in films, you don't allow marginalized characters of color to be true villains, right? They have to have a reason why,
Reason.
mitigating circumstance, or if, say, it's a gay character, they have to be effeminate. They have to be this and that. Where they, instead of just let them be a character who's a villain, you know, you talk about a gay character, TV, like Gus Fring on Breaking Bad, who's a brilliant, terrifying character. My reason I bring that up is in Malcolm X, West Indian Archie is a gangster. He's a villain. Him and Red, Detroit Red, Malcolm X have a falling out. He's trying to kill him. And I never felt like Archie's beef was unrealistic. Like I was on Archie's side. Like, yeah, you know, dude lied. You didn't play that number. You know, it's like that's how good an actor he was. As powerful as Denzel is in the role, I was like, yeah, I kind of see where Archie's coming from.
Well, and Delroy never tries to be intimidating. Like, you don't see him
No.
working to be scary. He just owns whatever room he walks into, and he's just the most frightening motherfucker you've ever seen. But without
Oh,
making an
God, yeah.
ostentatious show of it, like when like that scene with the lion about the numbers, it's like, oh, you're dead. Like,
Yeah, exactly.
and
And
he doesn't even, he's just like, all right, I'll see you.
in
Yeah, I'll catch up with
interviews,
you.
oh. Yeah, in interviews, he talked about that character. And he said that's how he had to adapt and make his way in that time period. And he said, but like, isn't it sad because this guy could keep all this stuff straight in his head? Like, he should have been for NASA or working.
Yeah,
Yeah.
a mathematical genius, you know, that could keep that stuff in his head. And Delroy, like I love what Sean just said though. He doesn't try to be intimidating. You know, he just is. He owns the room. You know, it's this idea that whatever room he's in, you're in there with him. He's not in there with you. You know, to quote another not so great movie. But that's a whole
It's
article.
interesting
Bad.
on
That's an article. Bad movies with great lines.
on TCM after the movie that ended up staying up even later because the host of TCM was talking to Delroy about the movie and he was saying about the end when he goes back and sees him not the end but later in the movie when he sees him and he's dying. He said in the script, it just said, West Indian Archie is near death when Malcolm comes in.
Oh,
So
yeah.
Delroy went to Spike and he's like, okay, so what does he have? What happened to him? And Spike's like, I don't know. That's your job. Figure it out.
Yeah, he went and studied the stroke unit and yeah.
Yeah, he spent 4 days in a stroke unit and tried to like pick up all the, because that is, so, it's so specific. Like, you know, usually you expect someone on the deathbed just going, but he has such very specific physical ailments and it's so, he's like, such a powerful presence and he's so diminished there. It's really, it's so.
Have strange. You guys ever seen, it's been a meme or something floating around the internet for years, but it's a scene from a TV show or something with Delroy Lindo. And he's on a news program and there's a white anchor and the white anchor is like, why can't I say the N word? What? And how Delroy Lindo, say it. Say it.
Oh no, that was on The Good Fight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was his
character.
That's
a really good show. Yeah.
I love
that
scene.
He was great on that.
I love
Yeah, he's just like, because his character was like, I forget, he was going to get some big job or run for office or something. Then he did that on TV and they were like, you screwed everything up.
I just love his, like, he's not trying to be intimidating. He's just like, no, say it. Say it. I'll say it with you. I love that. Just the cordialness that masks the unbridled rage that exists there.
It's like
I had to come back on camera.
It. Yeah, you can say it. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I'll see you later.
That's what I remember asking someone once, like, oh, you can't say this anymore. I was like, why would you want to?
I know. Yeah. Never understood that.
I get asked, this is not a Delroy Lindo thing, and I keep trying to keep us on task, but I get asked a lot when I'm at signings by writers, often writers of European descent. It's like, well, can I write about black people anymore? Can I write about gay people anymore? Can I write about this? I said, you can write about whatever you want.
Yeah.
There's no, that's what freedom of speech, despite, you know, what some people might tell you, we still have freedom of speech. You can write whatever you want. The issue is, are you prepared for the consequence?
Yeah.
Because everybody has the right to have their freedom of speech about what you said.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not ready for that, and I said this at a sign, I said a lot of times people ask that question, you don't want my advice, you want permission. I can't give you permission.
That's a really good distinction. Important. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, I was just writing this piece on Blazing Saddles, and it's like, you know, how did they get away with it? Because it was funny. If you're as funny as Mel Brooks and Richard Pryor, you can get away with it. Like George Carlin could say that stuff because he was George Carlin.
Yep.
That's what Anthony Jeselnik says, the comedian. He says, telling a really dark joke and getting away with it is when people laugh. If people are just pissed off, then I fail. I didn't get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I always think with, like, taboos like that. Like, I always think of the scene in Roger Rabbit when he gets out of the handcuffs and he says, I can only do it when it's funny.
Okay.
That seems to apply. I think that you can apply that to a lot of things in art. Like, you can get away with them if they're funny or good. It's just if you're not funny and you're walking through those minefields, you know,
yeah,
God help
you're
you.
Just trying to be angry or provoke. Yeah, absolutely. Well, are there any other performances or thoughts you had on Delroy Lindo? Or these
besides
movies?
Profoundly Normal?
Yeah, I mean, I think Sean and I are going to be like hitting YouTube now and looking for it. Yeah. Him and Kirstie Alley. Yes.
I mean, I don't have anything specifically. I think he's just, like, we were talking about going back and looking at his over and, like, how what he's done over the years. And, like I said again, he's made distinct choices to have the career that he wanted to have. And that's totally fine. I'm pulling for him. I don't think he's going to win the Oscar, but I'm pulling for him for Sinners. I went to see that, you know, and that scene had a profound effect on me. Because now my background, you know, is a little different. Because I've heard those kind of stories from my grandfather, from my great uncle, my grandmother, you know, and so, you know, it'd be nice to see him win. But Delroy's one of the actors, I feel like, man, that person really deserves, they need an Oscar. I don't know if he needs one. I think he's one of those character actors that his work is so powerful, it speaks for itself. He didn't need an Oscar the way people felt Jamie Lee Curtis needed one. Or Brad Pitt, or Leo, or, you know, or Al Pacino, people like Al and Robert De Niro, like, gosh, this should have all the Oscars, you know?
No.
And so you feel like, wow, it's a tragedy if they don't get one. But Delroy, the type of work he's done and the way he carries himself, I think if he doesn't win, it won't be like a failure because his career is so monumental, even with the bad movies.
Yeah.
I just wish there was more to that role in Sinners. Like, he was out, he's out pretty quickly. Like,
yeah.
I thought he was, just because I love him so much, it was,
yes.
I was so excited he was in it. And then it was like, oh, he's gone now.
Yeah.
I mean, spoiler alert, I do like that he's one of the last, you know, to survive, you know.
Uh-huh.
He goes out like a G, as the kids would say.
Yeah, I just wish there had more been a little more, yeah. A little more for him to do. But he does have like that. That was like the hardest I laughed that month at the movies when he goes,
Oh yes,
that's what I love too. Is he can really balance tone and humor and surprise you.
He's similar to Ving Rhames in that, and other. Yeah. I'm trying to think of another tough guy who can do that. Well, you know, Liam Neeson to an extent. Liam Neeson does all these action movies, and then if you blink, he'll do a really funny role. Like, mm-hmm. I like the Naked Gun. I mean, you know.
I had him on my list for best actor for my ballots, man. I mean, he was number five, but I had him on there. I think that's
it's
really
interesting.
Ingenious performance.
Really big, strong guys can do that kind of role.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for doing this. Anytime you want to talk character actors, movies, or whatever, you know.
I gotta tell Sean though before you wrap it up that when I read books, I like have imaginary characters in my head, you know, casting in my head. And when I first read Razorblade Tears, I was thinking for Ike, it was Delroy in the 90s would have been you know, he's way too old now, obviously. But
yeah.
Like Delroy in
it
the
was 90s, between, it really was him and Ving Rhames. That was the sort of amalgamation. Like Ving Rhames and Baby Boy, but with a touch more humanity, you know, and Delroy, like in West Indian Archie, you know, the people that you shouldn't mess with.
Yeah.
You know? And the people that they tell you, like Sean said earlier, they tell you, I'm going to see you later. Leave town. Leave right now. Like, pack your bags.
Yeah, the movie in my head when I read that book was Delroy and Will Patton. But,
My God. I love Will Patton. Yeah.
I love that.
And I love Delroy. So that would have been perfect.
I mean, we'd have to go back in time to shoot it in like before you wrote it. But,
1992 you know. Or something.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Thank you for having me, Jen.
Thank
I really appreciate you letting me come over here and waddle and whine about my movie likes and dislikes.
Always. It's wonderful. I love chatting with you guys.
I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as $1 per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching. This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.